Hello, this is The Link Show. We're going to get started in just a couple minutes here. In the meantime, if you have IRC access, be sure to join us at irc.thelinuxshow.com and channel /Linux Show. So hang in there. We'll get started right after these messages.
And we're back.
It's The Linux Show for December the 16th, 2003. Just a scant 2 weeks left in this year. Amazing how time has flown in 2003. It seems just yesterday we were having our 2002 wrap-up show. The years just seem to fly on by, but we're back once again bringing you another edition of the Tuesday Night Linux Show, talking about the latest and greatest within the Linux and open source community. Really happy to be back this week. Got a whole bunch of announcements to make for those of you who are regular listeners, and for those of you who this might be your first time listening, this will help you get a little bit in touch with the Linux Show community. If you all duck on over to our website, www.thelinuxshow.com, you'll see a couple of new links there. Some of them are old new links. The first thing I want to bring people's attention to is that we now have 5 mirror servers running, but we do need more. We are, once again, looking for people to step forward and provide mirror servers. You can see on there a biblio and linuxquestions.org. I want to thank both of them for giving us a little bit of a bandwidth when we do the live broadcast. If you are in the position where you can give us a little support in being a mirror server, there is a how-to on our site. If you just scroll down to the links section, there's a page, the Linux Show Mirroring Mini How-To. Just take a look at it. It's really pretty simple. Just contact us. We will add you to the list. And periodically, if we remember and if you prod us to remember, we'll also plug you and tell people about how wonderful you are. Really, the people from Abiblio have been a long time supporter of the Linux Show. When we had some serious bandwidth issues about 2 years back, they really came in and bailed us out. And very recently, Jeremy at linuxquestions.org has joined our mirroring crew. In addition to mirroring, I want to bring a couple other things to your attention. First of all, we've got a couple of changes that have been made to some of our community-based fundraising efforts to keep the Linux Show on the air. The bandwidth and telephone bill here are really expensive. Each show, the phone bill alone on each show is about $150, so it's not cheap to put on this show every week. But we do manage, thanks to you listeners and those vendor sponsors that we do come up with, we seem to keep going somehow. But anyways, a few modifications to some of the things that we're doing out there. First of all, you've all heard before, if you're a regular listener, about our domain registration campaign. Well, we've modified it a little bit for the holiday season. Whatever your holiday happens to be this time of year, we are inviting you to give the gift of domain. And if you click on a link in our support section, you will go to the registration site and have the opportunity to register a very, very cheap domain name. And in addition, we will send you an email on how you can get a certificate that you can then give to the person that you're buying the domain name for. I've got a listener out there, the person who operates linuxitch.com, a longtime listener of the show, has contacted us and has offered to put his support to us in the form of some hats. And so we now have a new link up on the site called Linux Free Beer Hats. And so if you'd like to purchase a hat to give it as a gift or use as your own, you could enjoy some wonderful paraphernalia Linux paraphernalia and support the Linux show at the same time.
The hat is a it has a picture of Tux on it and says, did somebody say free beer?
Yep. It's a cute hat. And we're going to be selling them, at least I think we are. We have to get approval on this from Linux World Expo. But we're actually going to be selling them at Linux World Expo for people walking down the aisles. I presume we're going to be selling them at some sort of discounted rate, but I shouldn't talk until I've got all the details in place. But go ahead and order one over the website and help support your local Linux show. Last thing I'll do about talking about support announcements is we do have the long-awaited Buy Kev a Gentner for Christmas Fund is now officially opened. There's a link in the support section for it. We've done an incredible amount of research on looking for the appropriate Gentner device that's going to allow us to do live interaction with people within the community. Right now, the way we've got the phone conference set up, it would be incredibly expensive. It would literally bankrupt us in a couple of weeks' time if we were to take live call-ins from the people in the community. And so we have launched ourselves towards a path of acquiring this Gentner unit and some ancillary telephone support that will allow us to eventually get to that position. This is going to take probably the better part of 6 months to get organized, and so we're going to do a little fundraising starting now. Surprisingly enough, we put the announcement up on the website earlier this afternoon. The link is on there, Buy Kev a Gentner for Christmas. We've already had somewhere around $250 worth of donations from regular listeners of the Linux Show, and so we do appreciate what you have done. You've opened up your wallets and put your money where your mouth is. We will be adding the names of the donors to that document that we have up on the website. Sometime in the next couple of days we'll start adding those names. But that's it for the announcements. Let's go ahead and bring in the panel and jump into segment number one. So how are you doing, Doc? I hear dishes clanking in the background.
Yeah, you hear me putting out dinner. I was saying earlier offline that tonight my wife went to Los Angeles to do business, and so I'm here with the kid and I'm feeding him, and we got our youngest at home who's 7, and our oldest who's 34 is showing up a little bit later, and I have to go pick her up at the train. So I'm kind of between all that stuff. It's, you know, it's holiday time.
Yeah, it's a good time of year.
It's all good problems.
Yep.
But I'm multitasking here by laying out quesadillas and nachos for the kid while I'm refraining from eating a burrito myself.
Yeah, California Fair, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. From a chain store, of course. From, I don't know, El Pollo Loco or Del Taco or one of these places. I don't know. El Pollo Loco. That's where it came from. They're not bad, El Pollo Loco.
Yeah. Well, how are you tonight, Artie?
Oh, doing fine. Everything's going smooth over here in California. Things very, very cold for California. Down into the 30s.
How warm was it during the day, though?
Yeah, well, you know, all right. We had the Santa Ana winds come in today, and so it got a little warmer, so it was up in the high 60s.
It's 20 degrees outside my door right now.
Well, that's normal. That's cool.
You
don't understand. Boy. These people around here don't understand cold. It's 50 degrees out, and they say, "Oh, it's cold." You know.
Yeah. It's all relative, huh? So, how are you doing tonight, Russ?
Oh, hanging in. The wonderful Washington D.C. area got hit with its second measurable snowfall of the season, which is pretty much unheard of to have that happen so early in the year. But it doesn't seem like the world has been paralyzed as a result, so life's pretty good.
Oh, good. Kevin, how is all the juggling going with the server getting back on, the new server getting back online?
Oh, well, looks like it's working so far.
Yeah, okay, we'll keep our fingers crossed on that one. That's actually one of our old stream servers that we put back online Didn't anticipate doing this quite so soon, but last week we really ran into a panic with the bandwidth getting just sucked up extremely rapidly last week.
Yep.
So hopefully if a couple more people out there will step forward during the course of the next week or two, we'll get another mirror or two set up and we'll be stabilized out for bandwidth once again for the next 6 months. Every time I say that, though, the listenership seems to jump up, and we need more. We really could use a mirror somewhere in the New Zealand, Australia area, that part of the world, because we have a lot of listeners out in that neck of the woods. So if you are in control of your bandwidth, please give us an email. Let's go ahead and jump on to segment number one, because got a lot of news to cover in the next 20-25 minutes before our guests come in. So let's go ahead and bring in our first story. The first one on the list is yours, Russ. Why don't you open it up?
Okay. Well, let me see which one is actually listed first. Okay, the reasoning study. This is an interesting little beast. Press release. The link, of course, can be found on the Linux Show homepage. And a group called Reasoning did one of their analyses of MySQL and came to the conclusion that the code quality was higher than with its commercial equivalents out there. And frankly, I forget which site, whether it was Linux Today or Slashdot or something, where people were discussing this. But there's a whole lot of discussion about how how valuable a study like this is, because it only looks at certain aspects of the code and so forth. But it is quite interesting to see, and quite frankly, this is potentially a very useful sort of thing to run under a manager's nose if you're trying to do a little proselytizing for open source in your organization. It basically says that that MySQL is a quality product, and that doesn't come as a surprise to a lot of people who use MySQL. I've talked to a lot of them over the years, so I've been really pleased with it. But this is one of those independent assertions of perhaps debatable value, but still it's out there and worth noting.
Did you happen to actually read through the entire contents of the white paper?
I didn't get a chance, no.
Okay, because I was curious if you had yet, because I wanted to know what peers they were comparing MySQL with. I'll have to give that a quick look myself a little later on in the show. So, why don't we go ahead and jump into your next story, Linux set for Mars landing.
Yeah, this is a cute one, actually. I don't know. I don't know if people are hearing this more than I am, but I've actually heard very little about this here in the greater D.C. area. I would hope in the U.K. and so forth it would be getting more press. But basically, a U.K.-based Mars lander is about to try to touch down in the next few days here, just before Christmas. And it is, Linux powered, and it's an interesting little piece. And I'll be interested to see what comes of this as time goes on. See how successful they are. But I'm not catching much of this in the mainstream press at all inside the U.S. I don't know if anyone else is.
There's really not a lot of coverage on this particular story. I think it probably has, something to do with the fact that it's not NASA.
Yeah, I think that has a huge amount to do with it. But I think it's still, regardless of biases and whatever else.
It's bias.
Hmm?
It's definitely bias.
Yeah, I think this is still a real interesting event, and it'll be interesting to see what they come up with, just from a purely scientific standpoint, and obviously from a Linux standpoint, this is significant too. I mean, they're betting the business.
What's interesting about the story is that both ends of the control system are run by Linux. I mean, it's Linux from from stem to stern. So, like, I mean, the earthbound stuff is Linux, too.
Yeah, the only thing that bothers me about this, and it's not a bother, because who am I to tell the UK, British Science Exploration Society, whatever it is, like, I lost the link I had set up. Now I'm embarrassed. But anyways, okay, whoever it is, they call it the Beagle. And really, it would have been really cool if somebody would have clued them in and they would have called it the Tux or the Penguin or something like that. That would have been really, really cool. But, oh, well, can't have everything, can we?
Yeah, I don't think they're there to do marketing for us. But that's going to be real interesting. My third story is actually what I consider the big one of the four, and that is it's a story from PCWorld.com, Linux to Gain Ground in 2004. And, you know, personally, I find these market studies to be of limited use, but from a proselytizing aspect, they're incredibly useful because there are lots of IT managers out there particularly that live and die by these sorts of things. So this is a good one to have on your belt. Talking about a survey of 527 businesses just last month, and it says 65% of respondents plan to increase their use of Linux, with 80% of those planning to do so in the next 1 or 2 years. So that's very significant. More than 70% of current Linux sites plan to increase reliance on Linux, and 29% plan to deploy Linux for the first time. And then there's another interesting little note down near the bottom where it talks about, of the respondents using Linux, 72% run it on servers, and 15% use it on the desktop.
Yeah, look at that number for a second, and let that number soak in.
Yeah, that's 15%
use it on the desktop. Now, they're not saying that 15% of their desktops.
Right. That's right. It's 15% of the companies use it on their desktop.
Yeah. Yeah,
like somewhere in the company.
Yeah, so it's somewhere in the company. But still, that's still a remarkably high number that it's penetrated into 15% of the companies as a desktop product. That's a huge statistic,
Yeah, so this is a good one to keep under the belt for the next few months if you have to justify things with corporate management and so forth. This can be really valuable, I think.
Yeah. And also, it's written by Jennifer Mears, and anybody who reads the tech press, you may want to just go out and do a little searching on Jennifer Mears. She's been a slow convert. She sort of picked up on open source, I would say probably 6 months to a year ago, but prior to that she had been moderately negative. And so it's good to see people like her in the tech press coming over to our side. It's, every day we see more and more of the mainstream technology press coming our way. So is that it for your list?
One last quickie, and that is a story over at InfoWorld. Open source said on cusp of broad acceptance, and starts off with some quotes from Brian Bellendorf from the Apache team. And once again, it's an interesting piece to throw under corporate noses, basically saying how this stuff is... is poised to bigger adoption than we've seen thus far.
Yeah, I took a real strange look at this article when I read it. I also had this one on my list, and I want you to all give this article a real good second look, because there's some information in here that made me shake my head down. Let's see, let me pull up the article first. And, okay, down probably halfway, Okay, here's a quote, and this is from Rod Smith.
Yeah, that's
okay.
It's a good one.
This guy's from IBM, okay? And he said, here's a direct quote, most projects that are open source don't make it. And he does not give any supportive data
right, as
to that kind of a claim. And so ever since I saw this article yesterday, I've been trying to track this guy Rod Smith down. I mean, chances are his boss is from IBM and hidden him in a hole somewhere.
Well, inside some sense, I think he's correct. Because, I mean, if you look at the number of things on Fresh Meat and NewsForge, a lot of projects go out there as almost a prototype. And generally, you have several different ones working along different lines, and they sort of end up fusing into a mega project somewhere. So one sort of takes the lead, takes the best ideas from the other ones, and you end up with something that's bigger and more robust.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean the project doesn't make it. It just evolves.
Yeah, and that's the point where, you know, there's a couple paragraphs here that are just kind of goofy in that, and we're talking about support can also be a concern, all these things. It's like there's only part of the story is showing up here in a couple of paragraphs.
I mean, we could using that same kind of logic, we could say that 99% of all closed source software developments fail miserably because we don't even have to know the specific details, because we know from the, at least domestically here in the United States, we know that 95% of businesses fail within their first year of operation. And so obviously if you're in the software development business, 9 out of 10 companies are going broke, really, whether they're open source or closed source. So comments like this of most projects, these are just totally erroneous, because projects don't make it primarily because of bad business plans. It's got nothing to do with whether they're open or closed source. And so I'm going to track this guy down.
The quote I liked he did have one good quote that's quote noteworthy and quote worthy is quote open source forces you to be open to ideas, and I think that's a good one.
Yeah, that's a good quote. Yeah, so I won't beat him up with a stick. Okay, and so that's it for your list.
Yeah, that's it for me.
Okay, Doc, have you got anything you want to bring forward this evening?
Yeah, a couple things. As I finish finishing a chew of burrito here, one is, and I'm not in front of a computer right now, but the guy who does ubergeek.tv, and I'll put this on the list for next week's show in any case, but he's the guy who did the, I don't know if you ever saw the, I think I pointed to it in the past, the switch to Linux thing, where we were holding the moon for ransom, and when we were negotiating with the Pentagon, we had got the blue screen of death. That was the last straw. It's pretty funny stuff. It's a funny thing. It's at ubergeek, ubergeek.tv, and he's an animator, and he just came out with the first, as he claims anyway, fully animated Linux-based open source online have fun with it flash-like game thing, and I don't know what the link is, but I'm sure it's at the top of ubergeek.tv.
It's about halfway down the page. I think it's in their fun stuff section.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'll point to it next week. But anyway, I felt bad I couldn't get the link in.
Yeah.
I just got to it this morning, and I just haven't been at a computer most of the day. The other thing is over the weekend there was a computer fair here in Santa Barbara, and and it was just a really interesting thing because our local Santa Barbara Linux users group was represented there. There were a couple of other various kinds of users groups as well, but it was just interesting to see what you could buy and what you couldn't buy and what it cost, because this is generally, your rock bottom garage sale, get it as cheap as you can, mixture of domestic and Asian guys. I got an outstanding pair of really wide binoculars. I mean, these really long, wide binoculars with a big objective lens, so you can look at stars with them and see galaxies and stuff. An incredibly good pair for $29. But here's the most interesting thing to me. Like, all of VDT screens that I've got, a Sony, a 21-inch Sony, and a 19-inch ViewSonic, they probably cost like $800 and $400 respectively when I bought them new, like maybe one, and I mean, 1 year ago was one of them, and maybe 3 years ago was the other. The 21-inch Sony was being sold for $99.
They're used, right?
Yeah, I'm sure it's used. But
yeah, I know that guy's at Pomona Computer Fair, too. And
yeah, but they had a really large number of vacuum tube-based screens of all sizes. Nothing was over $100. Nothing. And nobody was buying them. That was one interesting thing. Another one was that, you know, you could get a lot of flat screens for upwards of $300. And as I've noticed before, and I think I mentioned on the show, I'm not sure, it seems significant to me that you can buy a good size flat panel display with two speakers in it, and, oh, by the way, it's got television. It has a TV tuner in it for, you know, $500. And that, what that says about television is so significant to me. It just so subordinates it as a form of input.
What it says to me is critical mass.
And yeah, just critical mass.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I just bought a 17-inch flat panel for $300 weeks ago.
It's amazing. And then I tried to get I have three Linux boxes in downstairs here at the house, and one Ethernet cable going to them. Now, these are not going to be hooked up by Wi-Fi, right? But just trying to get an ordinary 4 or 8 pub port Ethernet hub was impossible. Nobody had them. Everybody had Wi-Fi. You know, the whole assumption is that all you want is Wi-Fi for everything. It's pretty amazing to me that out of a fair that big, now maybe there was one in there somewhere, but I could not find an ordinary hub. It was just interesting to me that was the case. I could, however, put together all kinds of you know, you could put together all kinds of boxes from everything imaginable for real, 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 real cheap. It was pretty interesting. A lot of Linux conversations going on. So that was just it's the first time I've been to one of those in a number of years, and it was just an interesting data point or set of data points about where we are now.
I've gone to almost every one of the ones this year at Pomona, which is the big one in the LA area here, and I probably the guy doing the monitors probably the same guy does it at Pomona.
Sure.
And it's just like any display you want for like you said under $100, and one of my
all running, they all look good.
Yeah, and they have them running, and you can, you know, they're used. But hey, I had a friend who's actually he's in the chat room right now, who's picked up one or two of those, and he says they're really good, and they are very, very nice.
They really are. I mean, the ViewSonic that I've got is an outstanding one, and it's. And what I like about the VDTs is that I can adjust the resolution. It doesn't have just one native resolution. You know, I mean, there are advantages to these things, you know, but but they are so totally out of fashion at this point.
I find that I always wear a Linux T-shirt, a Linux Journal T-shirt when I go to these things, and I find the conversation.
Right. Yeah, I went twice, and the second time I was wearing some Linux Journal swag.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, an awful lot of it got damaged by a crayon that the kid had left in his pocket.
Oh.
That melted in the dryer and secreted purple everything through all kinds of clothes.
Oh, then it looks like the Sun Microsystem or SGI Microsystems Sex Love and the Linux T-shirt then, right?
If it was done right, it would have, but it just looked like something really bad happened here.
Yeah, well, when something like that happens, Doc, your only recourse is tie-dye.
Exactly. Later.
Yeah, tie-dye it later. Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Any other stories?
Not for me.
Okay, well, we'll jump on over to Russ, right? Russ, what? Oh, we already did you, Russ.
Yeah, you did.
Arnie, what do you got for us tonight?
I've got two major ones. The first one is from Software Development Times, and they have a major feature on embedded Linux, the new homegrown real-time operating system. And this is a major article. There's a sidebar about NEA will add to Linux without adding to Linux, which is their merging of their own real-time operating system with Linux kernel to have a hybrid system, and which is kind of interesting. But the main article talks about Zorus, quite a bit about Zorus in Sharp, and Sharp Electronics has been doing with the Qtopia GUI and some of the Wind River moves recently, and it's a very, very good article. I highly recommend it. It's on SD Times website, and the link is on the Linux Show website. It's in the magazine, in the Dead Tree version. It's almost 3 pages long, and it's pretty in-depth article. Highly recommend it, because this is a really big area for Linux right now, and just the last few months, things have been taking off quite well in the real time and the embedded system. We now have, I noticed on Slashdot today, or was it yesterday, that one of the phone manufacturers has got a Linux-based cell phone out on the market.
Yes, they're starting to come forward.
I swear that my old Qualcomm phone ran some version of Linux or something like that, because it gave prompts when it was booting that it was or when it aired out, you know, when it crashed, it gave prompts that gave me the feeling that I might be running a Linux kernel under there somewhere.
I'm told that that Linksys wireless access points have Linux in them. Does anybody know if that's
true?
That's true.
Yeah, I have a Linksys wireless router, and I've already hacked it, and it runs Linux, and I can run arbitrary code on it, and even install code on it through a hack that was published on Slashdot, and that's kind of neat.
One of the things I noticed, I got a let's see, it's a Linksys wireless G.
That's the one I've got.
Yeah, it was $79 at Radio Shack. I had to run out and get it, and I thought, how long can you go? It's a 4-port physical hub plus it's a wireless G broadband router with a 4-port switch. It says.
Yeah, I've got that, and I've got that connected to an 8-port switch, which gives me enough connections.
Yeah. So the interesting thing to me is that the literature that came with it. Not that anybody pays attention, but. The Linksys that I got about a year ago assumed that you were using nothing but Windows, right? And it shipped as a little CD that only worked on Windows. This one still has a CD, but the literature says, you know, now no longer insults you by saying you have to open your Internet Explorer. It says just open your browser and do these things. So that's a positive sign, I think.
Since it's all browser related anyway, it doesn't really matter.
I even
upgrade my firmware on it. That's completely operating system. Portable.
Well, I think that whole Linksys story is really a very interesting story in of itself, because of the panic that Cisco initially went through. After they bought Linksys, and you know, here came to the realization that there was open source software running in all these Linksys devices, and Cisco, traditionally a very closed company, the irony is that it's this very same open source product, the underlying code, that has allowed Linksys to price itself at these ridiculously low prices, like you were just talking about, Doc. like you said, they had the wireless G one for like $79, and they had their regular 802.11b at the Radio Shack by me was on a rebate this past week at $29.95.
Yeah. And people are, you know, but at that price, you think, well, geez, you know, I'll get the G, and I'll spend the $79.
Yeah, you know? But my point is, at even at $79. Even a hacker, who's going to bother?
Right.
Who's going to bother? Just because you know it's got Linux on it doesn't mean you're going to, you know, take the software and put it on a computer at your home, because the computer is going to cost you more than $79.
Right, right.
So this worry, I think, is going to end up being a really good case. I mean, the standard, the people who've been in the embedded market for a long time already know this, but I think Cisco, as they come to grow into this, is going to be perhaps a real important trendsetter for the rest of the IT industry and the acceptance of Linux and embedded.
It's pretty amazing what the economics of this have done, because suddenly everybody has a cordless phone for their laptop, and most of the access points are open. Most people don't do anything. You know, they just put it up, and the SSID is Linksys, or as my Stumbler calls it, Linksys, when it detects it. But what amazed me is when I was staying at a friend's house, who normally has only, you know, dial-up AOL, I got 3 access points in her house. You know, so I could get on anyway.
3 access points?
3 access points from neighbors.
She lived next to the Hilton or something?
No, she lives in Los Altos, California. I mean, big houses separated by some distance.
Well, I tell you, Doc, I've got an access point here in my home, and I don't have one computer connected to it. I only have the access point there for, well, when I, you know, am out on the back patio with my laptop, but other than that, it's a hot spot. I don't use it. You know, for security reasons, I don't have any of my equipment plugged into it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm behind a separate firewall. But
so what is it broadcasting?
It's a pretty old one. It's an 802.11b.
Mm-hmm. But what I mean is, are you hooked? Do you just have it hooked up to the net and nothing else? Is that what's going on?
Well, I've got it plugged directly into my top end router.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's sort of sitting side by side with my my tier 2 router, and so all of my computers, and I have a substantial number of computers in my home, about 15.
Wow.
And I've got to, you know, have security going on here. There's some pretty important things going on. So
yeah.
I don't have any of my computers behind the Wi-Fi. I just do it for convenience and for the neighborhood.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, share the bandwidth. So.
Right.
Any more stories, Arnie?
Oh, yeah, I have another big one. And this is from Computer World, and this is a multi-article, just like the last one. It's a multi-article series. The headline article's entitled Demanding a Better Desktop Alternative. And this article goes into quite a bit of detail on the current market trends with the desktop, and they have quite a bit of information on Linux with the variety of opinions. Now, the article that's important in this series, the one that I recommend you read, is Early Adopters, this is sidebar, Early Adopters Stands Firm on Linux Desktop. And this is really, really good stuff. This is a shorter article, but it talks about Burlington Coat Factory, who went to Linux about a year ago, I suppose, a little over a year ago. And their CIO, Mike Prince, is talking about their experiences. And man, you just cannot buy advertising like this for Linux. This is just good stuff. And they began deploying Linux 5 years ago, even though they didn't go all the way until about a year ago. These guys are true blue Linux people, and they describe some of the experiences they had. One thing that's interesting is that, you know, these guys, although they're pro-Linux, they're not entirely pro-Linux, because there's a lot of people in the company who are really, really married to their Windows desktops. And he says people don't like to change their tools. Carpenters are used to their hammers. You're just not going to go in and change these things unless you have something terrific to offer, you know. And so part of Burlington still runs, you know, your basic Windows desktops. But the thing is, the whole thing works with the Linux infrastructure, and it's just it's a very good read.
Yep. What I think is, I would really like to get some qualitative and quantitative data to support some of Prince's conjectures in this article. But one of the things that he was talking about in the article was the total cost of ownership.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the direct quote. Haven't read the article in quite some time, but he was saying something about the number of support personnel required to support Windows versus the support personnel.
I've got it here. We have more people supporting a handful of Windows users than roughly 7,000 Linux systems.
Wow.
I would really love to.
Wow, that is great. Is that link on the
TLS website. It's a really good article.
I'd like to see the actual data to support that, because that would be a total cost of ownership blockbuster if that was the case.
Yeah, he said that he added that the Linux systems, quote, just sit there and don't break. They run and run and run. People can't mess with them. They don't get messed up on their own. Unless there's a hardware problem, we almost never have to do anything with them, unquote.
Yeah, well, there you go. There you go. Right there. Any more articles for us?
Those are the two main ones. And there actually is another sidebar connected to the desktop, and that is a sidebar. Overseas uses Pioneer Desktop Linux, and this is about Sun Microsystems expecting to announce the sale of 10,000 seats of its Star Office productivity suite to United India Insurance Company. And it's a report of that, which is a pretty big move to Linux.
Okay, well, we'll hold off on the rest of the stories that we've got on the site tonight. Probably the only thing that I'd really point people towards is towards Grok Law. There's an article on Grok Law that is the first of a series that you ought to pay attention to. There's been some emailing going back and forth between some community people about developing a library of evidence. Actually, some of the people in the Linux Show community have been taking SCO quotes and researching them to help develop that evidence. But one of the major goals of acquiring that evidence has been finding the anecdotal Caldera and SCO employees that were working on the kernel. And this is the second in a series of articles about SCO employees that were working on the kernel with the approval of the company. And so this is important stuff. So, but let's go ahead and take our break, a very short break. Kevin, put on a tune. We'll come back on the other side of the break. Bring in our guest from GNOME, and we'll take it from there. Everybody kick back and relax, listen to the tune, and we'll be right back.
Nobody's
And we're back.
It's the Lennox Show. The second half of tonight's episode of the Lennox Show. We'll be talking to the folks from the GNOME Foundation in just a moment, but wanted to come in first with a very, very brief comment. We're going to be, over the course of the next 2 weeks, doing a couple of things to motivate people, what we would like people to do. You know, we're always having this Tell 10 Friends sort of movement to get people to get their friends involved with the Lennox Show community. Well, what we're going to do during the course of this week is I have got a whole pile of T-shirts that have been shipped to me from Real and a couple other Linux vendors. And what we're going to do during the course of this week is have people contact their friends and sign up for our email list. And if you can get them to not only sign up for our email list, but to also send an email to staff@thelinuxshow.com and have them tell us that you told us to sign up for our email list. The 10 people who get the most people to sign up for the list this week are going to have T-shirts sent out to them. Next week we're going to have some other prizes that we're going to be passing out, and we'll probably have something else besides signing up for the mailing list. Sometime in the next couple of weeks we're going to be having some sort of contest to give away a conference pass at the Linux World Expo. For those of you who weren't listening in the last couple of weeks, we are going to be broadcasting from the Linux World Expo. We are going to be packing up the entire studio, moving everything to New York, and broadcasting for the entire week. And we're partnering on that with the folks from IDG. They're picking up about two-thirds of the cost, and the people from Real Networks are picking up the rest of the cost of getting the Linux Show out to New York with their studio, and we're going to be broadcasting live. For you Linux Show junkies, you'll be happy. We're going to be doing 17 hours of broadcast that week. So if you don't have enough of the Linux Show after 17 hours, you really need a life, let me tell you that. That's for damn sure. But we will be at Linux World Expo the 21st through the 23rd of January. If you are in a LUG that services the New York area, please contact us at staff@thelinuxshow.com. We are looking for some volunteer help to help us out at the event. We're also going to try and put together some kind of a LUG party. No promises on that, but we're going to see what we can do about putting together a LUG party. So keep us in mind as you set up your plans for the latter part of January. That is it for the second half announcements. Let's bring in our guest. Well, we're continuing a ongoing thread tonight, a thread that we started up actually about 4 weeks ago, talking about desktops. We started out 2003 thinking that 2003 was going to be the year of the desktop for Linux, and for the first 6 months it didn't seem like it was happening, but for sure, without question, the last 6 months this year there's been an explosion and desktop penetration and the variety of desktops available. So we thought we'd finish off the year the way we started off the year, and that is by talking about Linux desktops. And we've had a whole string of shows now about desktops, and tonight we're joined by a couple of folks from the GNOME Foundation that are going to be talking about both GNOME and the GNOME Foundation itself, as well as the GNOME 2.4 desktop. And so, let's bring them in. Leslie, are you there?
Yes, I am.
And Jeff, you're there.
Hi there.
Hi. Welcome to the Linux Show. For those of you listeners who are interested in learning lots about Jeff and Leslie, their bios are on our website, www.thelinuxshow.com So I'll let you just go ahead and read it while we introduce Jeff and Leslie. I like to start out each guest segment with something really positive and upbeat. And so why don't we start out by talking about what were the biggest accomplishments of the foundation during the last 12 months? What are the real highlights of the year for you? And it doesn't matter who starts in. Jeff or Leslie, just go ahead and jump in.
Jeff. Well, I'll leap in. One of the coolest things is that we've been continuing our time-based releases. So we've had the release of GNOME 2.4 this year. We've had a huge amount of GNOME deployments, particularly in the last 6 months. So everyone's heard about China, the National Health Service in the UK, Spain, and quite a few in South America. We've had increased support from projects like OpenOffice that are interested in supporting GNOME and integrating with GNOME. And of course now we're working very, very solidly on GNOME 2.6.
You know, just highlighting what Jeff said, in terms of deployment, Spain was 80,000 computers in the first iteration and up to 150 all running. That's the planned one, will be 150 running GNOME. The 80,000 were in schools in the state of the region of Extremadura, which is the poorest region of Spain. And the deployment was at a ratio of one computer to every two students, which is absolutely amazing.
That is amazing. But what about the UK health system? Have you got a grasp yet in your mind of the number of computers that actually is?
Half a million, supposedly.
Well, I have been told by a friend who lives in the UK that the health system in the UK is 1/7 of their economy. And so I think 500,000 computers is probably on the low end. But still, that's a phenomenal number, 500,000.
Mm.
That's a huge number for one single deployment. Makes your mind boggle to see projects like that coming forward. Very exciting.
Particularly in a first world country. Most of the other deployments we've seen countries that are somewhat poorer. So it's nice to see really big deployments in UK, US, Australia.
Yeah, well, we are starting to see some inroads being made, you know, in education in the United States, and just on a sort of district by district making a decision. So just for example, the Riverside School District in Oregon went to an LTSP based Linux running GNOME for all of their computer labs. And what was amazing was the kids initially had a choice between the proprietary system and GNOME, and they all pretty seamlessly moved to using open source software almost exclusively simply because it worked.
LTSP is a Linux Terminal Server Project.
Yeah, thin clients.
Thin client.
Oh, and another thin client success is, does everyone remember the Largo, Florida news?
Yeah.
From a few years back? They've actually been shifting over to Zimian GNOME, so they've got a lot of their big servers running. All of their thin clients running Zimian GNOME now, and interestingly enough, they're running GNOME on tablets in their police cars. I know there was some talk about tablets on the show last week, and that's pretty incredible. And there's some really good photos of the tablets running Zimian GNOME. It's cool.
I've got a couple questions about the community that surrounds the foundation. It's a really old, well-established foundation. I know that. But there has to have been a little bit of excitement over the course of the last couple of months with Novell coming forward and buying both Zim and Sousa. Within the community that surrounds the GNOME Foundation, is the sentiment in general positive? Is it a wait and look? How is the community responding to the Novell commercial entity coming in and combining all three of these companies together?
I think it's very positive. We've always had an understanding of the importance of distributors in GNOME, and the Novell Zimian thing was just, no one in the community knew about it, so it was just incredibly exciting to see what everyone felt was a somewhat irrelevant company embracing Linux and open source in such a big way. And really, by buying Zimian, they brought in the professionals, the guys who really know what's going on. And then Sousa, now they have a platform as well. So where they take that, I think it's going to be a very interesting 12 months.
Sousa has always supported GNOME. I mean, the people say, talk about them being married to KDE, but that's not necessarily true. I used Sousa for quite a few years, and I always used GNOME. I never used KDE on them. Although they do support KDE quite a bit, they still support GNOME as well.
And they were actually working with Timian as well on GNOME stuff before any of this was announced too. So.
I think the Zimian move was brilliant. It's starting to shape up, at least, as being a brilliant move on the part of Novell. Hope they can keep it going forward in a very positive way.
Certainly the sentiment was led in many ways by the people who were, I would say, most affected by the acquisition, which were the developers at Zimian, who have been very excited and very happy with the move, with the acquisition by Novell.
Well, yeah. Well, that can be scary, though, being acquired. I mean, it doesn't always spell good for the future, but I think in this case it definitely is a really good opportunity for both entities, and I think it's going to bode well for the GNOME Foundation in the long run as well. So let's talk a little bit more about the people within the foundation. How many people are actually contributing to the various projects that are sponsored by the foundation?
I think the latest is more than 700, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's just people who have accounts on GNOME CBS. There are many, many projects on SourceForge and all over the place. So it's about 700, 900 that have accounts on GNOME CBS now.
That's a remarkable community in its own right. The 2.4 desktop just recently got released. When was the actual release date?
September.
Was that long ago? Okay. I know Kevin downloaded it for us, but I couldn't remember the exact time. How many downloads have you experienced? Do you have any clue?
Oh, I actually haven't been watching the FTP server myself, but I have GNOME, which is a building tool for unstable versions of GNOME, and there have been hundreds of thousands of downloads of the various versions of that since it began, and that was early on in the 2.2 process. So that's the kind of bleeding edge sort of users who are interested in it. So there are definitely a lot of users downloading it. Most of our users, though, use either Red Hat or Zimian rather than, you know, building from the tuples that we distribute. The recent Red Hat releases, 8 and 9, have included GNOME 2-based desktops. Zimian Desktop 2 has been incredibly successful, and it's a very slick desktop.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there's Sun's Java Desktop and Solaris releases.
And there's Debian. the stable Debian is still firmly entrenched in GNOME 1, but you can still use testing in Unstable, which has the later kernels, later GNOME. That's one of the bugaboos about I run Debian, and that's one of the bugaboos I have about that is I can't use a lot of cutting edge software because it's all GNOME 2 based. If it's GNOME 2 based, I can't run it. And Debian is real slow and stable and conservative and maybe a little too much so.
Sarge will be pretty cool though because the Unstable release of Debian has a great GNOME 2.4 in it.
Yeah.
You just called just a moment ago 2.4 as a really slick desktop. How so? What do you think is the reason for the real positive reception that GNOME 2 has had? We've been using it in Red Hat distributions for quite some time, but what kind of feedback are you getting from users that is the reason why they like the product?
The biggest thing, and really what we've been aiming for, is the idea of just works. We don't want complicated software that you have to, you know, click 70 buttons to make it work properly. We want really, really good defaults and the entire system to feel as if it works for you straight out of the box. In fact, there was an Ars Technica review that came out as soon as 2.4 was out, and they gave us a really fair review. Like, they picked up all of the things that we weren't happy about ourselves. But the biggest thing that they said was that it really does just work, and that pleased everyone, basically.
There's been an ongoing emphasis inside of the development team and the foundation for usability, and I think that's paying off in a big way. And then things like the accessibility, GNOME accessibility, which is not an afterthought, but is actually part of is a core component that then makes it something that everybody could use. And we've made great strides recently also in internationalization and localization.
That was my very next question, was on the localization issue. How many languages are you supporting right now?
I counted them recently, and it was 67, which are either fully localized or in process.
Try that, Bill Gates.
So one of the incredible stories about our localization efforts is the Mongolian team turned up from nowhere, and within about a month they had just over 85% of the desktop translated.
In a month.
And in a month. So I'm assuming some work was done before they started checking things into CVS, but that was incredible. And previously to that, I hadn't heard of a Mongolian GNOME community. So I'm keen to go to Mongolia now and find out.
There you go. And this is an article that hit the news, I think it was last week or the week before, that I featured, where they contrasted the amount of adoption of foreign language on the open source community as contrasted to the closed source and the, you know, like Windows. Windows just can't hold a candle to it.
Yeah.
It's just international adoption of Linux. It's no wonder it's so hot.
And for every one of those translations, that's a group of people who are very passionate about the software. So 64 to 70 translations, that's, you know, global, very worldwide.
Yeah, I think that's an important point, is that every one of those translations represents a group of people who are excited about the GNOME and are also, then becoming knowledgeable in it, and that just grows everything all around.
Well, think of it from the very basic fundamental level, is that in a lot of these localization type of projects, the motivation is they have nothing to use, period. within that area. And I'm sure that's the case in Mongolia. There's probably not too many on the whole English speaking people in outer Mongolia, and for them to even have a chance at bringing their people up a little bit in terms of some form of computer literacy, the localization issue is vitally important. It's just a remarkable what a job you've done. I'm getting some feedback from some people that they're being overpowered by some music. Kevin, could you check into that, please? But okay, let's shift gears a little bit. We've talked about what's been good about GNOME in the past year. What your achievements have been? What's going to be the next major hallmark for the future? What are you looking towards adding as either functionality or some sort of identity or language capabilities? What's the next level that you're working towards as a community?
Well, we've got our 2.6 release coming out in March, and that will be another 6-month incremental release. Great thing about that is that it will include things like Evolution and some of our multimedia applications like Totem and Rhythmbox. I've been told that I have to say hi to everyone listening who's using Totem and Rhythmbox, by the way. So those will be coming along. But I think one of the really interesting undercurrents to GNOME development at the moment is complete desktop collaboration built into the entire system. With 2.6, we're getting the Evolution data server, which will have contacts and calendaring built in and accessible from any application that wants to use that information. And we're building more things like that that sit at the user level so that all of this information is available. At the other end, there's this dashboard, the project that Nat Friedman was working on earlier this year, which is written in Mono. And it has this really cute, succinct little feature that applications send clue packets to tell it what they're dashboard what they're doing, and dashboard will provide contextual information to you in its little dashboard interface. Now the user interface is only a prototype at this point, but imagine a desktop in which all of your applications and everything going on, part of which is what you're doing at the moment. So you might be talking an IRC or you might be writing an email. Imagine all of your applications telling each other what's going on there, and then also all of your user information, things like your buddies for your IM client and your email clients and contacts and those sorts of things. And all of that data and that information running together on your desktop and the kinds of contextual information that you can get out of it. GNOME 2.8 or 2.10 is going to be really, really, really interesting in that respect. And I think there's going to be some killer app sort of features there that are going to make people look twice at whether open source can innovate or not.
Any hint as to what the killer app might be, or you're keeping that as something you don't want to talk about right now?
That entire idea of complete desktop integration and collaboration, that sort of thing, as part of your computing experience. So, I mean, that opens up all kinds of potential for new applications and new ways of interacting with your machine, but just getting the framework in to begin with is where we started.
Okay, I got another slight change in direction for you, and that is the issue of Bruce Perens and his new movement towards developing a user Linux kernel. What are your opinions of this new direction that Bruce is trying to go in, and how do you feel that the Gnome Foundation will fit into that, if indeed it happens? It's certainly not a done deal yet, but what is your opinions of it?
It's something we haven't even really explored at this point as a foundation or anything like that, so I think it's kind of early to comment even on, you know, what direction the foundation will be going in.
Fair enough.
So
I've been watching it because as a Debian and GNOME user, it's kind of interesting. It should be cool. I mean, Debian does need to do some work on its release management and attractiveness to enterprise users. But in the last week, there's been a big flame war about GNOME versus KDE support in user Linux, which has been a bit scary and kind of amusing as well.
You got to have the flame wars, though.
Oh yeah.
They're fun.
I was actually really surprised because for a long time we've been talking about how diplomatic the GNOME and KDE hackers are, and how nice we are to each other. In fact, the webmasters of each project sometimes send each other flames sent from either user community, which is amusing at times. But it seemed to get slightly more heated with this user Linux thing. I think basically the answer to all of the problems there is that it ends up being Debian. So it's this supported area of Debian, and so you can always use your KDE and stuff like that in it as well.
Yes, yeah. Well, I think it is. An interesting issue from the standpoint that, in a lot of ways, it is contrary to the whole concept of open models, and it's. You know, taking the open model and trying to constrain it into a little box. And so although I admire Bruce for what he's attempting to do, I have my doubts that it could ever possibly happen, because just trying to get too many people to constrain into one box, and that just doesn't happen typically with open source. Way too many flames.
There are other distributions that have made similar choices that are fully community-based distributions too, so I don't know whether it's a constraining kind of thing. I think it's just a matter of priorities, and
yep.
when you're selling to enterprises, you don't want to confuse the issue.
Yep.
What do you think about the recent moves to bootable CVEs? That has been a fairly hot development, where you can take a CD, pop it into your machine, and all of a sudden you're running Linux. There's particularly two nice distributions of Morphix, both of which run the GNOME. One is one is fully packed with everything, and the other one is their what they call their light GUI, which is goes on a little mini CD and basically gives you a very fast booting and very nice little GNOME desktop. For maintenance and administration use.
Yeah, what those guys have been doing has been pretty awesome.
I mean, there's a lot of really nice tools for Bootstrap. I mean, in automatic configuration in those in Canopix and Morphix and all those other ones.
I think those bootable CDs are going to be the future of installers for Linux. Everyone's working on sort of custom install systems, but at least for PPC and x86, you can run an entire Linux system and then install it all using all of the tools that you're used to. So I think that's going to be the coolest next shift.
That's where I see it going to.
Yeah, hey, Arnie, one of the people in the IRC said that now that they're running Knoppix and discovered that it's really Debian, do they have to grow a beard and become happy?
Well, I don't know. Maybe that's the way it has to be. I don't know. I don't have a beard.
I think it's a little hard for me to grow a beard.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we are up to 20 after the hour, so we are running a little tight on time. So I would like to ask you for a couple of closing comments in terms of the needs of the community, the future of the community, the message that you would like to communicate to the audience in terms of how people listening to the show here. Keep in mind that this audience is pretty hardcore in terms of development world. So how can they best become involved with the GNOME development? Jeff?
Well, the easiest thing is to check our projects list and find a project that you like. We've also got Bugzilla, and there's nothing better to start finding out how GNOME works than fixing bugs. And check out our Stuffed Art page for developers and for the 2.5 release. That has good links to things that need work. But there's also our documentation project and our translation projects and our usability project. And they're always looking for keen coders to work on things. And if you're interested in accessibility, there is a really, really bright bunch of guys working on that sort of stuff as well. So we've got heaps of particular applications, but then also our desktop-wide projects that you can get involved in.
And we obviously really would love to have anybody, you know, come and get involved. I mean, one of the things I think it's important is to know is I'm not a developer. So, you know, and I've been involved in it from the beginning, and there are a few other people who are now coming up and also people who have been involved from the beginning who are not developers. And so really we welcome, you know, anybody's talents and abilities, and you know, would love to have more people join the community.
How is the bounty offering going?
You know, it just started, and so it's real hard to say exactly what, but the response so far has been really positive.
There's heaps of new names working on evolution, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And the great thing about the bounty is that it's really clear to see who's working on what, because there's a bug for each bounty. And there's lots of people who are collaborating on their different bounties. And a few of them have been finished yet, but they haven't actually been accepted upstream. So no one's actually taken a prize home yet.
Well, soon, though, I hope. We hope.
Yes, exactly.
Now, when you said there are lots of new people working on evolution, is that what you said, Jeff?
Yeah.
How many? I mean, is this like a major inflow of talent starting to work on evolution?
Well, there's been two things that have initiated that. First was the evolution guys decided that they wanted to have their development far more in the community, and so they've proposed it for inclusion in the GNOME desktop release, and they've opened up all of their mailing lists. All of the discussion is happening out in the open. Previously, there was some Zimian only lists. The second is, of course, the bounties, and it's probably half and half what's attracted people to evolution. But I think there's about 30 or 40 people that I haven't seen before tapping away at evolution things in Bugzilla, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a lot of people. When you say 30 or 40, that's a lot of people. I would call that a successful acquisition of talent. That's very, very respectable. Well, I'd like to thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you for having us.
I know you're going to have some people at the Linux World Expo next month, so make sure that you come out of the .org area and come visit us at our broadcast stage. We'll set you up with an interview slot. It's a lot of fun to broadcast from the floor of the expo, and just come out and meet us and hang out with the folks here at the Linux show.
That'll be great. We will be there, so
yes, it'll be.
We'll definitely come by.
It will be fun. But thank you very much for coming by, and I just want you to be aware that we do have probably about 12 people within the IRC that we have never seen before, and that is a large number of new people. So I think you can directly attribute that to people within your little development community that have stopped by to visit us. So thanks for coming by. On behalf of the whole crew here, we'd like to thank everybody that has stopped by the show and is listening or participating in the IRC. We love to have you come back each week. Make sure you tell your friends about the Linux Show. Stop by our website, www.thelinuxshow.com. Sign up for our email list. It's really, really, really important. It helps us get notifications of all of our broadcast changes to the people who are out there listening to the show. Also, one more favor we'd like to ask of all of you people still in the IRC. There is a link on our website that is to the Helix Project at Real Networks. We'd like everybody out there who is listening that doesn't already have one to download a copy of the Linux-based Helix client and load it on your machine and test it out and email your comments about the new Helix product to staff at thelinuxshow.com. We're working with the folks at Real to acquire some feedback for them on their new release. So do us a favor before you you sign off this evening and just go to our website and download a copy of the Linux Player and then email me back. We really do need feedback to help them out on this. So thanks, everybody, for coming by the show. We appreciate it, and we will be back here next week at the same time. So until then, everybody, we are out of here. Good night. Sail. If he is the sexton,